Nela. What's happening, Miami? What's happening? This is Red Pill Rolly coming to you live from the Radio Red Pill headquarters, and it is February the 16th, and we are going to have a great show for you guys tonight. Listen, I promised you last week, I gave you guys a little teaser, and I promised you that we were going to have a guest. This guest is Mr. Dennis Ross. He's going to be on in a little bit. Before we get to the guest, I just want to tell you that, and I'm going to get there fast because I know you guys want to go. I'm going to tell you guys that so far, nothing crazy is going on outside of the fact that Donald Trump was impeached from, or he was actually acquitted from his impeachment. So, yeah, exactly. He was acquitted from his impeachment. So, listen, I don't believe that Donald Trump needed to be impeached, okay? I think that Joe Biden has come onto the scene with this unity and American build everything American, and he's doing a bunch of the stuff that he's saying he's doing. It's really just Trump 2.0, right? He's saying a lot of things that Trump was saying from before. but you can't unify the country if you are sitting here and you're saying that you need to impeach the guy who's just got out of office. I mean, constitutionally, I don't know who the hell thought that was even a constitutional thing. You can't impeach a guy who's not in office. The whole point of impeachment is to remove someone from office. Once a guy's gone, what are you impeaching? What, are you pissed because there was a insurrection? So you want to hit him with something? Hit him with something in the private sector. More than likely, they're going to try something along the lines of suing Trump or getting him in the private sector. I don't know how, because as the Trump lawyers showed, he obviously did not say go to the Capitol building and attack the Capitol building. He said, we're going to march over there. If you read the transcripts and you listen to what he said, I know a lot of you guys, we're going to march over there. We're going to cheer on some congressmen. We're not going to cheer on the other ones because the other guys aren't doing what we want them to do. But he also said, look, we're going to walk over there and we're going to peacefully and patriotically complain, basically. We're gonna protest peacefully and patriotically. That's what he asked for. He didn't say go over there. I want you guys to go over there, and I want you to take, you know, and I want you to beat in the whatever gates, and I want you to storm the Capitol building. Nobody said that. So you can't hold someone accountable. It's like in the court of law, and this very much was a case. You're innocent until proven guilty. There was no proof that he was guilty. The fact that you don't like somebody doesn't mean that they're guilty of doing something that they didn't do. That's just the way it is, okay? And anywhere where there's due process, even though there was not correct due process here, but anywhere where there's due process of the law, you should be innocent until proven guilty. He was completely innocent. By every word that he said, he was completely innocent. He never directly incited an insurrection, which basically says he wasn't guilty of the insurrection. And like many people said, if they're going to start calling witnesses, the FBI is going to get called up as witnesses. And we're going to start getting to the bottom of, you know, what happened really with the Capitol security. And I don't know if you guys know this, but constitutionally, the Speaker of the House is the one that's responsible for Capitol security. Like the sergeant at arms, he is always involved, and he's the guy that's there and goes to all the hearings, and he goes to all the sessions. But if he doesn't perform his duties, it's the Speaker's job, and it's between him and the Speaker. So if he had anything to say, or if he asked for backup and the Speaker denied the backup, doesn't that fall on Nancy Pelosi's lap? So she can harp and scream and yell and do whatever the hell it is that she does all she wants. But at the end of the day, she was going to get dirty with this whole thing, and that may be one of the reasons why he didn't get impeached. I don't know. I'm just speculating. But I'm telling you, listen, impeachment, like finding someone guilty of doing something that they didn't directly do, is not correct. I don't care how much you hate Trump. It's not the right thing to do. Okay. And I would be just as against it if they tried to impeach someone else, even from the other side. That, you know, they already did it once over a bullshit phone call. Now they're doing it again over a bullshit speech. And it's just ridiculous. Okay. Anyway, that's the big thing. The other big thing is, you know, Cuomo in New York is pretty much, there's a bunch of stuff coming out on Cuomo. You know, they downplayed the deaths from his decisions. I mean, we all knew this, right? This isn't news. I mean, if you were following certain news outlets or if you were listening to anything but CNN and MSNBC, we knew that this was the case. But alas, it is news today because Trump is gone. So now everybody's filling the headlines with whatever they can. It turns out that Cuomo is a nice filler. So we'll see what happens. I personally predict that not a damn thing will happen, just like nothing happened with blackface in Virginia. Nothing's going to happen with Cuomo. Nothing's going to happen with, you know, the governor of Michigan or nothing. Nothing's going to happen. You know why? They have a big D next to their name. And the media is run by the big D, okay? And yeah, it's run by they're giving you the big D. That's what they're doing. So, you know, nothing's going to happen to Cuomo. And they're probably going to turn around and try to blame it all on DeSantis, you know, because DeSantis has pretty much given the media the big D. I'm going to bring on our first ever congressman guest, and I'm super excited about this. He's the first guest that's ever been on Radio Red Pill from, you know, the United States Congress, hopefully not the last. Like I said, I keep sending messages to a few of you guys, and hopefully you will answer soon. But for right now, I'm going to bring on Mr. Dennis Ross. He is going to come on, hopefully, as long as this system works, he's going to come on right now. There you are. Dennis, how are you?
Very good, really. Good to see you.
Great. It looks like the audio is good. Everybody's good. Dennis is at home. Guys, he couldn't make it into the studio, but he's calling us from home, so we really appreciate that. And Dennis, thank you again for coming on. I know that you're a busy guy. You're a professor now, right?
Yes, correct. At Southeastern University.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, thank you again. So I'm going to ask you a few questions, just stuff that my constituents, the people that listen to me, it's not a whole lot, but they all ask me questions, and I said, hey, ask them this. So first thing is, how do you feel? Like, do you feel like the mainstream media has lost credibility at this point? There's a lot of little guys like me that are popping up everywhere. And, you know, it seems like the mainstream media is losing ratings constantly. Do you think that that's happening, or is that something that's going to bounce back? What do you think will happen with that?
Well, I think that there is a major transformation in the mainstream media. And this goes back to when I was a kid, when you had the three major broadcast networks. Right. You know, media then was really, there was an element of trust involved when you received your news, and it wasn't sensational news. You know, now mainstream media is essentially a business plan, and their focus is on making a profit. Money. I mean, let's face it.
Yep.
But because the consumer, the listener is craving information.
Sure.
Information is power. Information is access. It's a matter of whether the information is credible and factual. And, you know, in today's world, when you have the social media as it is, the outlets, you know, the ability on your smartphone to broadcast like the President Trump did with Twitter, you know, I mean, you create all these new competitions to establish business plans.
Right.
So how do you sell that product? You sensationalize it more. Right. You embolden a base more. You're able to appeal to a certain demographic that you can, you know, solicit advertising more for.
Sure.
Do I think we're doomed? No. What I think, though, Rolly, is I think that because of this tool that we have in social media, in this smartphone, in the internet, we have greater opportunities to learn the facts ourselves.
That's true.
I mean, let's face it. But while when you and I are talking right now, we could search, use a search engine, and find factual information that it would take us otherwise weeks sometimes to find out about.
Yep.
It's a question of how lazy we are as listeners.
Yeah.
I mean, are we so lazy as listeners that we're just going to accept somebody's opinion, or are we going to go find out ourselves? And it's a question of discipline. Yes, the mainstream media. I mean, you look at what's happening in New York with Governor Cuomo.
Right.
I mean, this whole nursing home fiasco is, first of all, it's totally avoidable. And second of all, the cover up, they're backpedaling from this. And, you know, CNN has really been, you know, on the biased spectrum for quite a long time.
Right.
And unfortunately, I think the American people are seeking trust, don't trust, and in most cases are too lazy to find out themselves. So they're looking for the easy, you know, information that they just want to believe.
Yep.
It's going to be a lot tougher. But I think people like you, as you gain credibility with your listeners, your prognostications, I think you're going to become more of a reliable source for people to get their news. Look, you're not going to have people say, I don't want to know anymore.
Right.
They're going to still want to know. That demand is going to be there. But unfortunately, that credible source of information may really be at risk.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where we have to distinguish ourselves is looking for that credible source.
Well, I agree. I mean, the difficulty for guys like me is always, you know, if you put out something that goes against the mainstream, you fight the conspiracy theory, right? Everybody is like, well, where did you get that information from? The internet obviously is not all reliable, but if you read, you know, it's like the guy that comes on with a burning car in the back and it's a mostly peaceful protest. Like, well, wait a minute. What about the fire? What about the Molotov cocktail that they threw at the cop? Did that not happen? Did I not see that? You know, it's right. So it's so difficult because I recently just had a conversation with a guy who told me, oh, you know, you need to watch CNN. They're very reliable. And I'm like, what? I don't understand. Yeah. But that's the problem. Most people don't want to listen to the alternative. They're still kind of entrenched in the past where you could trust the news and you could see something. And, you know, I remember being a kid watching Patriot missiles flying around during the first Gulf War, you know, and I would see that. And I was like, wow, this is like riveting. This was before I left to the Marine Corps, before I left anywhere. I was riveted. I watched the reporters and now I watch them. It's like a comedy. I don't believe half the things that they're saying because it's all like kind of made up, very programmed, you know.
Selective.
Yes, correct. And it's selective. That's the other thing. I feel manipulated. I don't like to feel manipulated. I want information. And so that, you know, that's why we create things like this, like Radio Red Pill, where we try to give information and we try to not be biased, even though we lean a little bit conservative, right? But we want to kind of relay our message in a very good, thought out way. It's getting hard. It really is getting hard.
I agree.
So speaking of them, the next question here is conservative voices, like we were talking about, they're getting silenced also. Okay, we just lost Lou Dobbs. There's a couple other guys and ladies that are in hot water. Big Tech took down Parler, you know, which I just thought what happened with Big Tech and Apple and the way that they took it off the App Store, it's scary. I mean, it's scary.
It's not the government doing it. It's not the government doing it. These are the oligarchs.
Yes.
This is private sector censoring free speech.
It's scary. Hey, look, I'm getting goosebumps. Nobody realizes how scary that is, but that is really scary. I mean, that's horrible. So
they don't do that in America. They do that in Iran. They do that in North Korea.
Thank you.
They don't do it here.
Right. So we're seeing it here. And I'm like, I keep telling everyone, I'm like, guys, communism, my family's Cuban. You guys don't understand. You should be able to speak from the mountaintops, whatever you want to say. And you know, but anyway, with that kind of power, you know, and the current administration now is starting to add illegal immigrants as voters, maybe possibly adding states. I'm sure that they're going to present that soon. How can the GOP win the majority back? What do you think are the next steps that we should do with getting younger conservatives? Well, what should we do? What do you think?
Yeah, let's take a step back because I'm very methodical in the way I approach this, and I'm also very optimistic.
Oh, good.
Irrespective of what happened on January 6th, and irrespective of what happened in the presidential race on November 3rd, understand that the Republicans control 32 out of 50 legislatures in this country.
That's true.
That in 2022, based on the new census results, there will be a redrawing of congressional lines. 32 of those states are controlled by Republicans. They have they picked up more seats than they thought they were going to pick up in the House. The president had more Latinos and more African Americans ever vote for a Republican president at any time. This is a trend. This is momentum. This is how we build on this. We make sure that we take back the House in 2022, which I firmly believe we can. We make sure that we continue our outreach to the diversity that the Republican Party is starting to build through the Latino communities, the African American communities. The Asian communities, people are looking for this. They're searching for leadership. And without, you know, getting into Trump's presidency, he provided leadership.
Yeah.
You may not have liked his methods and manners,
correct,
but he did do leadership.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what's going to have to happen is that the Republicans are going to have to coalesce around a common good, a common goal. And we haven't been able to do that. When I was in Congress for 8 years, we had the majority. We had over 237 members of Congress. We only needed 218 to pass anything. We couldn't get 218 Republicans to coalesce around anything, whether it was healthcare reform, immigration reform. John Boehner didn't want to take on immigration. Paul Ryan didn't want to take on immigration. They didn't want to take on health care. It was a fiasco. The Republicans have got to realize that the momentum is in their favor and the left is taking over the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
There
far
is
left.
No question about that.
Yep.
Nancy Pelosi has got to reach out and create peace with her left wing, with the AOCs and the squad. Mm. That's why they come up with a rule package that is gender neutral. It's absurd, but she placates her left.
Yep. Yeah, and she doesn't want to hear it.
You know, that's a powder keg for them right now. They really want to take that Democratic Party to the left. And she knows that when you govern, you have to at least govern somewhere close to the middle.
Correct.
You know, you can placate your base with extremism, but you got to govern somewhere near to the middle. So the Republicans really, and history is on our side. In midterm elections, the party that is not in the presidency usually wins the majority of elections in Congress. And so I firmly believe that the odds are in the Republicans' favor to retake the House in 2022 and retake the Senate in 2022.
That's great.
Now, but in order to do this, we can't be distracted by infighting. We
right.
can't be distracted by, you know, fighting against conspiracy theories. We got to put all that behind us.
I agree.
We've got to coalesce around a greater good. We've got to find out what that is. And there's a lot of good issues out there to create the greater good. I mean, you know, we can drive this unity theme that Biden espoused in his inauguration address and force him to follow through and exercise on it,
yeah.
which he hasn't, by the way.
Right, how do you unite the country when you're trying to impeach the president that just got out of office? Like, you're just basically, you're spitting in the face of everybody that voted in him. That's not uniting the country. It's horrible.
And you're doing a stimulus package through reconciliation that is totally partisan.
Exactly, 100%.
And I'm telling you, the Republicans just need to pound the drum that this is not unity. This is, the American people crave cohesion. You know, compromise is not a dirty word.
No.
Our founding fathers in 1787 had to compromise in order
yes.
to create a constitution.
That's right.
They didn't violate their principles,
that's right.
but they gave a little to get something.
Correct.
And that's how we get to where we want. And, you know, the Republicans have got to be flexible. And now we're going to need some leadership. And we'll see those wanting to come out. I know Nikki Haley. I know Mike Pence are coming out.
Yeah.
Mitt Romney, I'm sure, is going to come out. You'll see things start to develop and how they get involved in this midterm election, how much money they raise, how active they become.
Sure.
But I think it's set up good for Republicans in 2 years.
Well, after hearing you speak, that it gives me some hope. I'm not going to lie to you. But one of the things that we've gone away from, and this is leading kind of right into my next question, is we got to find something to unite on, right? So I've heard you say, you know, that the United States has had divine providence, which has helped
yes.
the country pull through great challenges. I myself am a believer in God. I'm not the most religious person, but I do believe in God and I believe in divine providence and I do believe that God helps. But we seem to be moving further from God. It seems to be like the country, the mainstream especially, is everything that's being done is against religious principles, against God, against something that has to do. In some areas, I would say Christianity is under direct attack. So how do we, you know, I mean, do you think that God would be something that should be maybe upheld by the conservative movement? Should we step away from it so that we don't create animosity on the left side? I don't really know which way God plays in this. What's your opinion on that?
Well, we have to recognize divine intervention as part of the formation and development of this nation. And let me just go over a few things with you.
Yes, sir.
In the Declaration of the Independence, in the last sentence, that they say, that Thomas Jefferson says, by divine providence, we hereby pledge, you know, our fortunes and our sacred honor
right.
and our lives.
And in God we trust.
Afraid.
That's the whole...
You know, in 1787, in the Constitutional Convention, when they were protracted and when they were polarized, they couldn't come up with an idea of how to develop a nation, Benjamin Franklin, a deist, mind you,
yeah, correct.
Stands up and gives this speech to give a motion that all proceedings from here forth shall be opened with a prayer to the divine, to the one who looks out for us, whom without we would not be able to raise a kingdom. Now, this country has evolved, you know, from, you know, rich white landowning white men controlling the country to a very diverse nation because of the process. But the one constant that we've seen in our nation throughout our history has been the recognition of divine intervention. Abraham Lincoln did it. During the Civil War, he declared a national day of prayer, a national day of thanksgiving, where he asked the American people to go to their houses of worship and ask for God's involvement and forgiveness. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, on July 5th, 1944, the night before D-Day, gets on national radio and gives a prayer to the American people. It's not, I'm not proselytizing to you.
Of course not.
I'm not telling you that politicians need to preach. That's not what I'm saying at all. All I'm saying is that conservatives need to continue to recognize the influence of God in the development of our nation. And as long as we continue to do that, we're going to be okay.
Yeah.
It's interesting because we feel like we have to just ignore it. I'm not saying ignore it.
Of course not.
You know, I mean, we had a tremendous, one of our founding fathers was a Jewish man by the name of Ham Solomon, without whom we would not have been able to fight, Washington wouldn't have been able to finance the revolution.
Right.
I mean, we need to understand our history, not run from it.
Yeah, or tear it down.
That what has worked in the past can work again in the future.
I agree.
And so I want to be encouraged, but I also want my Republican Party and my conservatives to recognize and acknowledge the influence of God in the creation and development of our nation. And I think you can't ignore that has been one of the, if not the strongest element that's kept us together as a nation.
I agree. I think a lot of people think that science and modernism somehow negate God. And to me, everything that I read in science, from, you know, little science projects all the way through quantum physics, all of it proves God to me. I mean, all of it shows me that there's some divine power, whatever it is, and that's God to me. And so, you know, I don't see how you run away from it, but I definitely think that we need to bring it somehow back into our lives for sure.
And I think also it gives us the moral fiber that's necessary in order for a civilized nation,
correct,
to continue to develop and prosper and do well.
Absolutely. If you bring back the principles,
and that's anchored in, sure, Judeo-Christian values.
Correct. Because those values they're principles that allow us to speak civically about disagreements. You know, it's all the moral fortitude that you get from having a religious base is something that helps us when we're in troubles, in times of trouble. And if you run away from that, I think you weaken your position to create unity. So that's why I asked that about unity. And then we talk about Donald Trump. There's no way to really have a conversation about the political landscape right now without Donald Trump. He was a fighter. Like, I personally, I'm 44. I haven't been through, you know, Nixon and everybody behind that. But I remember from Reagan on, Reagan was amazing to me when Reagan was there.
Yep.
Right. I haven't seen anything remotely close. I know I'm older now. I wasn't involved in huge politics, but I was a Marine. I was involved politically. I wrote a letter. Thank you. No, the honor was mine. Believe me. I wrote a letter to Bill Clinton when I was 18 years old. He answered the letter, and it was amazing, actually, to me. I still have it, but I wrote it. I was always involved. I always cared about what happened to this nation. That's why I joined the military. Trump was, there was something special about this guy to me. I don't see how other people don't see it. He wasn't the most palatable guy. In fact, I tell people all the time, I didn't vote for him the first time because I didn't know what he stood for. He wasn't a politician. He was a guy that was a businessman. I was a little afraid. You know, I was like, whoa, you know, this guy, he runs his business. He may want to run the country like a business. Then you hear that everyone. But let me tell you, between him and Hillary, I was like, okay, I'm just not going to vote. But there was no way I could vote for Hillary when that happened. So now the next generation of Republican, you know, Mr. Trump, he's getting up there in years. He's not really the spring chicken. You know what I mean? I don't know if he should run again. I've been debating in my mind whether he should run again or just get behind a strong, young political candidate. I don't know which one, but I'd like your opinion on that. What do you think would be, even though nobody can tell what Donald Trump's going to do. What do you think? What do you think between him running and maybe getting behind somebody like a Matt Gaetz or I don't know, anyone. Just anyone.
Well, I think that he will have much greater influence getting behind someone. And let me tell you why. He brings to the table a great deal of charisma, leadership, but he also brings a great deal of negatives now. And he can be a kingmaker, which I think would transcend to probably helping the Republican Party and helping the democracy. That's the role I would like to see him take.
Yeah, me too.
Having been involved in Republican and politics for quite a while in Florida, and in the U.S. in D.C., the traditionalists, the established Republicans still aren't coming back. Want to come back to the table? They're scared to. We've got to bring them back. Trump may help keep that from happening if he takes the banner.
Right.
I would rather see him in a role in being a kingmaker rather than trying to be the king again.
I think I agree with you. The more time that passes, your initial feeling is not always the right feeling, right? We're impulsive. We're human. Right. You see something, you go with emotion, and I'm like, come on, Trump, do it again, But then as time passes and with everything that happened and you see the whole landscape, I think the smartest thing he's doing is just staying quiet for a while. I mean, obviously, he's kind of been banned from a bunch of places, so he doesn't have the same voice, but he still could make more noise than he's making. I think he's being quiet. He's kind of settled in, and I think hopefully he's being advised to see that, to see things through. But I feel now, after that happened, after everything that's happened, I feel like he would be, I think your word is perfect, a kingmaker. If he gets behind the right candidate and that candidate, oh my God, I just thought of our governor, DeSantis. I mean, if he gets behind a guy like DeSantis and you put him together with like a Candace Owens, who's a smart, sharp black lady, lovely. I love to hear her speak. I just love her. And if he gets behind that ticket, my God, like who wouldn't vote for that? So if he's smart and then he still has the influence, everybody knows DeSantis is a Trump guy. So something like that would be phenomenal to me. But going now, you mentioned that you were in Congress. This is a question that everyone that I know wants to know this in one way, shape, or form. And being outside the political realm, just being a voice outside independently, we don't get to talk to congressmen all the time like yourself that's had the experience of being there 8 years dealing with Washington bureaucrats, dealing with Nancy Pelosi on a first person, Chuck Schumer. I mean, if you take Biden and Pelosi, they have 100 years worth of political experience in Washington. Is there really that wall, that kind of establishment mentality in Washington that you go there running and gunning and you're ready to do a bunch of things and all of a sudden they kick you in the nuts, And then you're stuck and now you're dealing with the establishment. Does that really exist there? Like, from you?
Yeah, it does. And I'll tell you why. It's the party structure.
Okay.
When you get elected from your district, the people that sent you there is where your allegiance lies. When you get up to D.C., in order to make your way into the party, in order to work up leadership, you've got to do other things. And it can be conflicting. But I will tell you the interesting thing. The reason we see the Schumers still around, the Pelosi's still around, the Steny Hoyer's still around, and we don't see that on the Republican side, is because the Democrats have in their system seniority. So when you're in Congress as a Democrat, the longer you're there, then your seniority will give you everything you need. It doesn't matter about performance. That's why you have a Maxine Waters, who's chairman of the Financial Services Committee. It's seniority. On the Republican side, you've got to kind of, seniority is one of the factors, but the Republicans also have 6-year term limits on chairmanship. And so you can't be a chairman of a committee for more than 6 years.
And the Democrats don't?
The Democrats do not have that.
I didn't know that.
The Democrats do not have that. So you perpetuate yourself and over. All you have to do is win in your district. And believe me, Nancy Pelosi will win all the time in San Francisco. There's no question about that, and so she will always be there. And she's been there for so long that she's at the top of her food chain. Now, one of the things about being involved in leadership, and I was involved in leadership, is that you're going to spend a lot of time raising money. And in order to raise money, you have to travel the country, not only to raise it, but also to distribute it to other potential candidates and colleagues in order to gain their support so that they'll vote for you for leadership.
So it is a
constant cycle. And, you're running every 2 years.
Yeah.
In addition to the money that you've got to raise for your campaign, you've also got to raise money for the party if you want to have a role in the party.
So would it be better to run, to do 4-year terms so you have some time to actually govern? How do you govern if you have a 2-year cycle and you have to raise money and it takes you a year to raise money? How do you govern?
Rolly, I think 4 years for members of the House would be reasonable. I think a 2-year budget would be necessary instead of a 1-year budget. Okay. We don't even do a budget anymore. We just do continuing resolutions and we don't, you know, but having to, because that way, if you get the budget out of the way for 2 years, right, then you can focus on other issues.
Right.
Then you won't have any government shutdowns. You won't have any debt ceiling crisis. You know, okay, you're going to have issues that deal with, you know, social justice. You know, that's the big term right sure. now. You're going to be able sure. to deal with healthcare. You're going to be able to deal with immigration.
You can focus
you're
on
be
things.
Able to deal with yeah with criminal justice reform. But these changes have to be made internally. In order to do 4-year terms, you need a constitutional amendment. That would be tough to do. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd have to probably have on the opposite end of it, you know, a term limit, 4 years, not serving more than total of 12 years, something like that, that yeah. might make muster a constitutional initiative.
Okay.
But it would take a while to get done. But it is, I mean, I enjoyed it. It's very consuming when you are
sure.
in Congress.
I'm
it's
sure.
Very, very consuming. But it's still an absolutely necessary role that we have to make sure we have good people in.
Yeah.
And
it's worth fighting to get in there. Like if I wanted to run for Congress when I turned 50, I'm like, okay, that's it. I'm running. It's worth it. Like you can still make a difference. If I was to go to Congress and fight my butt off, there's a way to make a difference. There is. There's a path.
There absolutely.
Okay. Well, good. That's good.
Absolutely.
Okay. Good. Well, I mean, okay, so now let's get into the current president real fast. Joe Biden, 52 executive orders. What the hell's going on? Like what? I thought Trump was supposed to be the guy that ruled as a dictator. He's got the House, he's got a tie in the Senate, he's got no legislation going through either side. Why is he doing everything via executive orders? Is there anything we can do about it? Should we do anything? What's going on? What do you think about this?
Well, first of all, you answered your question right there. Because there's no legislation going through, he's doing executive orders. By Obama did this when we took over the House, and Harry Reid couldn't get anything out of the House, and there was so Obama starts doing a lot of executive orders. Biden is probably setting the record for the most executive orders in the first 30 days of his term. But overall, I mean, there were, you know, some presidents in the past have done over 1,300. I think Truman did 900 and some. Franklin Roosevelt, of course, he had 3-4 terms. He did over 3,000 executive orders. But the reason they do them, Rolly, is because they want to placate their base that got them there. Mm. Now, understand, what is an executive order? An executive order is not the creation of new law. You can't do anything contrary to the Constitution or to statutory law.
Right.
You have to be essentially doing an order, interpreting an existing law that should be implemented this way. In doing so, almost every executive order is always challenged in the courts, which sometimes the courts will issue a stay that say, do not implement that order until we resolve the issue. Sometimes they won't, depending on the impact and whether there's going to be harm that may ensue as a result of the implementation of that executive order.
Got it.
But they also do not survive the president, which is one of the reasons Biden did what he did, is he undid a bunch of Trump's executive orders his first couple of days in office. They also tell the people that helped you get in there, your extremists, I'm doing this for you. I'm doing this for you.
And they send a message.
It's as much a message as it is, you know, an indication of where he wants the country to go.
I understand.
Executive orders are, you know, they really were ministerial, you know, declaring a day of recognition for whatever, or, you know, but it's not an imperial presidency, is what I'm saying.
Right, right. He's not governing by decree. He's just kind of placating people.
He's placating people, and he's assuming and issuing this order that it's within the boundaries of the law that have empowered him as president.
Right.
And of course, somebody will sue against that. And this will, most of them will be decided in the courts. Hmm. We saw that with DACA.
Yep.
We've seen a lot of these executive orders that Obama did, that Trump did, that are all challenged in the courts.
Yeah.
You're going to see more of it the more gridlock there is in Congress, because he's want to show the American people that he's getting things done. Sure. You know, Obama said, "I've got a pen and a phone." You know, when he was president.
Yeah.
it makes great, you know, sensationalism.
Sure, it's a good headline.
it's not neither statutory nor judicial precedence.
I got you. Understood. Okay, so good. So not so much to worry about there. Okay, so all of that kind of leads, even though he did send a couple, like he killed the Keystone Pipeline. I don't know how that's going to affect.
Well, yeah. I mean, and you know, that can be challenged in the courts. I think that he'll probably win on that because it was an executive order that started the Keystone Pipeline.
So he's just killing the other one.
Congress could come out and say, we're doing the Keystone Pipeline, and no executive order could stop that.
Yeah, but what would they? Would it get past the? Would that be a House thing? Or would, right. So
no.
All right. So then, well, let's talk about finance then. Since our I don't know. Financially, the markets were doing good under Trump. You know, they seem to be tanking the last couple of weeks. At least my portfolio is doing pretty crappy after the last couple of weeks. But what do you think? I mean, financially, you know, the crypto market has a $1 trillion market cap. A lot of people believe that it's going to grow. A lot of companies are adopting it. You know, recently Tesla, Apple's getting into it. Miami, the city of Miami, I don't know if you know this, but the city of Miami, now they issued a, I don't know if it was a law or what he did, a decree. I have no idea what he did, but now they can pay their employees with Bitcoin. Your I think your retirement can have Bitcoin in it. It's pretty cool. We became the first Bitcoin community. So, I mean, what do you think about that? Do you think that there's a space for it in national finance?
It's interesting. I wish I understood it better. I really do. I have one of my former staffers, who is a brilliant young lady, went out after she left me. She went and started the cryptocurrency Chamber of Commerce and has done incredibly well. And she's done phenomenally well. She understands it. She's a very smart young lady. But it is becoming more and more accepted. Rolly, this is my concern. And I'm talking this as a layperson who understands the significance of the American dollar being the reserve currency for all our global markets.
Correct.
We are $24 trillion in debt as a nation. Any other nation like that would be in terrible, terrible situation and at the very mercy of all the other nations because they would be dependent on another base currency. We are the base currency. We believe we're going to stay that way. There will be a tipping point if we're not careful. China will try to become the reserve currency.
Mm-hmm.
If there's more adoption of cryptocurrency, of Bitcoin,
it'll weaken the dollar.
It'll weaken the dollar, and it may in and of itself over time become the reserve currency, which is not out of the realm of possibilities.
No, no, no.
So what does that do for us? I think it raises a lot of issues for those of us that believe in one, the dollar. It would make the United States much weaker.
Weaker.
Yep. Financially. It would make it much weaker militarily.
That's correct.
You know, I think that we need to learn more about it. I think we need to probably partner with it, not let it control our currency.
Right. That's what I was going to suggest is that maybe the United States should adopt it, partner with it, and sort of implement it, start figuring out a way so that it becomes a U.S. Bitcoin, you know, but I don't know how that would work.
And, you know, let the Federal Reserve, you know, quite frankly, you know, I don't want to use the word regulate, but
monitor,
utilize it in their, in their portfolio, if you will.
Sure. Sure, sure. Yeah, I just don't see. I mean, the financial thing is, I know you're a businessman as well, and I'm a little concerned about what's happening with the finances. I did a podcast a couple weeks ago on crypto. It's called What is Crypto? And what it is I spoke to a guy who's talking about this, and he basically explained what you just explained. But he says, look, you know, if you're in Russia and you're going to buy, I don't know, two million barrels of oil, you pay in US dollars because it's the global currency. So what happens is, you know, there's things attached to that. But what happens when Bitcoin becomes what they pay with? And then they no longer pay with the dollar. What happens to the US dollar? It's a depreciating currency. Whereas Bitcoin, I don't know if you know, but Bitcoin is a finite number. There's only 21 million Bitcoins that are ever going to be mined, which means the more Bitcoin gets bought, the less Bitcoins are available and the higher it goes in price. So what if that takes hold, then the people that own a lot of Bitcoin are going to have a lot of power. And that's going to be scary, you know, and I keep telling people because I like Bitcoin. I think it's cool and, you know, it's new and it's kind of a novel. But at the same time, and I like to make money in it, but it worries me because it's weakening our country. It concerns me. That's why I'm asking you about it, because I feel the exact same way that you do. I feel like if you weaken the dollar, you weaken the United States, and then you're pretty much, you know, you're putting a cart before the horse, because at the end of the day, okay, now a few people have money, but the country's weak and we're being governed by China or India, who are both huge Bitcoin players. That sucks.
Yeah,
that's a scary, that's a scary proposition. So
I agree.
Listen, I really want to thank you for coming on. I'm not going to keep you on any longer. It's already been over 30 minutes, but I really thank you. I hope we can do it again sometime, Mr. Ross.
Love to, Rolly. Thank you, man. Appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you so much. I'm going to keep going at it. And if you ever need anything from me, I'll send you a mug. That's all I can do. Thank you, bud. I appreciate it.
Take care.
Have a great day.
You bet.
Bye-bye. All right, guys. So there you had it. Listen, Mr. Dennis Ross, again, I can't even thank you enough for your time, your insight. You brought hope to me. You really did bring hope to me. I think that having that kind of hope and that kind of impulse, you know, really puts a fire in me to want to continue doing what I'm doing here, talking to all you guys. You know, slowly but surely, we're going to be moving up. We're going to be talking to different people. You know, if you guys have any questions for anyone, you know, you can email me at Rolly@RadioRedPill. But just looking at what he said and talking about the Republican Party and how we need to move forward, the fact that we pretty much run 32 of the states, I believe he said, I think that's very positive. If you're a conservative and you're sitting here going, now what do? We got to deal with Biden. We got to deal with this. Well, you know, he just told you directly from you know, his experience and his knowledge that there's sort of a bomb inside the Democratic Party and it's building, and that's not going to get any better unless they change some of the things they're doing. And I don't see Nancy Pelosi changing anytime soon. I don't see Biden changing anytime soon. I like the fact that he agrees with what I think now, is that as much as I love Trump and I'm a Trumpian and I love having Donald Trump as the president, I think that would hurt us in this election. This is my personal opinion. I may be 100% wrong, but I think what hurt us in this election is the fact that some people just don't like Trump. They just don't like him as a person. He's not palatable to everyone. And so they were just never Trumpers. And you might have been 5%. It might have been a 10%. It might have been 2%. I don't know what kind of percentage it was, but they were the same way that I couldn't vote for Hillary Clinton because I can't see her anywhere. The same way that I couldn't vote for her, there's a lot of people that just didn't vote for Donald Trump, or that voted the other way because they're like, Biden, whatever. He's just a patsy, but he's going to be there and we know what we're going to get. He's going to be sort of a softy. And listen, just so you guys understand, Joe Biden has spoken with Russia. He's spoken with China. He's spoken with everybody. He still hasn't called Israel. He hasn't called the prime minister of Israel, but he's talked to all our enemies. So this guy, his view on the world is not the same view of the world that Donald Trump had, and not the same view of the world that most conservatives have. So we got to deal with that. Okay. But a lot of people don't care. They just figure out, we'll put him in there. We'll put him in office. As long as we're not listening to Donald Trump, we're not dealing with his tweets, we're not dealing with his rhetoric, then that's better than having to deal with whatever Biden's going to, you know, conjure up. And, you know, I personally, as Mr. Ross said, the left is taking over the Democratic Party. That's a scary proposition to me, because the left, the far left, is communism. The far left is total socialism. Their social programs, dependency on the government, high taxation, the lack of the patriarchy, or the disintegration of the patriarchy. The left is all about dependence on your government. What I'm telling you, you don't want to depend on your government. You tell me, would you rather go to a private doctor? Would you rather go to a government run hospital? Which one's more efficient? The private sector in the United States is what makes this country fantastic. The private sector in the United States is what's going to get destroyed Okay, even ownership of private property will eventually be a problem if you depend only on the government. The government becomes this big monster. You don't want the government to be a big monster. You want to be able to do what you need to do and have the government there to regulate overall regulation. But you don't want to be with this big shadow looming over you. But that's what happens. So the left is taking over the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party is in power right now. You guys, the implications of that are monumental. We got to get over that. Okay, you have to govern somewhere near the middle. There are some things that I can concede with the Democratic agenda. There's some things that I can't. We got to find that unity. Hopefully that unity will come in the form of God and some peaceful situation. Most of the times that unity comes from some mass horrible event and we go to war and then everybody becomes patriotic again. And they're like, who cares about the left or the right? We're all Americans. And that's how the country gets united. Or, you know, whatever, aliens come down and everybody's like, oh, we're all human. And it's some mass event. Okay. Hopefully we don't need some catalyst or some cataclysmic event. We just need God back in our lives. We just need prayer. We need good people. Everyone that I know on the left is like, oh my God, everything great. Don't kill the trees and don't kill the birds and this and that. But then if you mention Donald Trump, they'll put a gun to your head and blow your brains off. Like, that's not, you're being a hypocrite. Okay. If you want to be good all the way through. Okay. Nobody on the right is trying to blow your brains out just because, you know, you believe the things you believe. We're trying to have a dialogue here. Okay. We have to find a way to meet in the middle. Mr. Ross mentioned it. I'm telling you, I agree 100%. Again, I'm really happy that he came on, and we're going to continue this talk in a little bit, but I want you guys to know that I'm going to continue with Radio Red Pill as hard as it is for me. I'm going to do it for you guys. I'm going to do it for me. I'm going to do it for my kids. I'm going to continue to do it until I can no longer do it, because we need a conservative voice. We need somebody from Miami who's talking about these issues and talking about these things on a weekly basis, at least. I wish I could do it every day, okay? But I'm going to give you the facts. I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm going to tell you everything that I believe. And then if you like it, fine. If you don't like it, you can go listen somewhere else. But, or you can argue with me. I have no problem with that. Hopefully we'll get some phone lines going at some point and we'll start doing these things live. But for now, I want to thank you for listening to this awesome interview. I want to thank you for listening to the podcast. We're going to be back next week as usual. I'm going to tell you guys that all the first responders, you guys are in my prayers. You guys are in my mind. You're in my heart. All the guys in Texas dealing with all that ice. My buddy Manny, who's over there freezing his ass off. He's got nowhere to stay. My buddy Michael, who's in Texas, also dealing with that. Listen, guys, suck it up, man. That's all I can tell you, dude. It sucks. But you're in my prayers. And hopefully you'll get back to Miami to this nice weather. I'm going to go play some golf, pair of shorts. I'm just messing with you. Listen, thank you for listening. All the first responders, stay safe. We love you. We're praying for you. And we'll see you soon. And like always, candela.